Hello and welcome to the Inspired Women Gathering Show. My name is Dixie Bennett. I'm a four-time best-selling author, international speaker, spiritual guide, mentor, coach, and healer. I help heart-centered healers and leaders who feel unclear about their direction, heal their self-worth, embody their soul purpose, and create sustainable business by tapping into their own body-mind connection. I believe our body is a direct reflection of where we're stuck in our life and business. When we can clear those obstacles that block the path to our best and true self, possibilities are abundant. This show, we discuss all things from life, relationship, spirituality, business, and everything in between. Women are so inspiring, living through their stories, finding resilience, resourcefulness, tenacity, and the powerful impact that we make in the world. I love connecting and having deep conversations that help awaken you to different possibilities and ways of being. I hope you will find juicy nuggets that you can apply to your life or business so that you can live your best life. Are you ready? Let's get started. Our conversation today is around meditation. And who says that meditation has to be one way? And my guest today is Celia Louise, who I've gotten to know over these last few years. And she's somebody who just inspires me on so many levels to look at life from a different perspective and just different ways. She has, when I think of her, she's lived so many lives, you know, experiences all wrapped up into, you know, her life that, you know, I'm just in awe. And, you know, when we meet people and come into connection and conversation, I'm just so inspired by people's stories. And that's exactly what this podcast and the show of Inspired Women Gathering is all about. And this couldn't be more timely than just this moment. And, you know, just allowing ourselves to explore, like, what does meditation mean? How can we apply? You know, how can we start to apply and take action on these things and bring them into our life in a natural way? I think there's just so many opportunities, you know, to slow down and just come into a deeper awareness of ourselves and our soul. So before I get into her true introduction and before we get into more of this conversation, I'd love for us just to settle into our bodies for a moment. Just drop what you're doing. Just take a moment. And even if you can't take a second to close your eyes, maybe even just gaze over to the left, gaze over to the right. Drop your gaze even just in front of you. Find something to focus on. And whatever that is for you, I just invite you to even just explore the color, maybe the texture, maybe the shape. Just simply notice, acknowledge. What does that piece mean to you? Is it just an object that's kind of hanging out in your space? Does it have a purpose? What does it do for you? How do you feel as you're exploring this object or whatever is in front of you? Just slow down and take pause. Explore. Be curious. Notice even just by stopping how your breath kind of dropped in. It slowed down. Maybe your shoulders even just softened. Maybe just taking note of the rise and fall of your chest. Noticing how deep or how shallow, or even just where your breath lands in your lungs. Do you feel like you're getting enough breath? Do you feel like you need more breath? Even just noticing the rest of your body, what's going on. Is there any tensions or tightness or any areas in your body that just need some acknowledgement? And this just brings you into the present moment. So we kind of started from an outside experience and then just kind of bringing it into the body and bringing it into the present moment. And we can do it in seconds. So I hope that this was helpful for you, and I hope that it helped to center you and to bring you into this space to be able to absorb and hear and enjoy this delightful conversation with this delightful woman that I can't wait to introduce you to. So her name is Celia Guilford, or she goes by Celia Louise. And Celia's story is so full of twists and turns that even she had a hard time believing it. Her lifelong passion for learning started with undergrad studies in agriculture, ecological horticulture, and permaculture, while running an organic farm. The concept that we are all connected through an energy field fascinated Celia since her days of teaching others to grow food in Canada, California, and Indonesia. She practiced her energy skills with plants, animals, and water. Her move to Indonesia led to a master's degree in human security and peace building, and her second career focused on peace, human rights, and humanitarian aid in Indonesia, Pakistan, and Rwanda. This work showed her the best examples of human resilience, kindness, and love, and expanded her appreciation for life while working to make the world a safer place. Celia's biggest life's lesson was learning to understand herself. A change in perception led to certifications in heart math, brain story, the emotion code, tantra, yoga, reiki, and meditation. She had to overcome limiting beliefs, embrace forgiveness and gratitude in order to embrace her authentic self. This led her to understand the only way we can have world peace is when we are each peaceful inside. Celia is the proud mother of one daughter and one granddaughter, and two granddaughters, sorry, with another on the way. She has owned two art studios, one in Manitoba and one in Vancouver Island, because the world is always a little better with a little art to play with. Celia loves to share the practices that radically changed her life and brought her to true, unshakable inner joy. She runs a program called Come Home to Your Heart and an emotion code practice, both of which help people release their blocks and find their inner joy. You can also connect with Celia at CeliaLouise.com. Great. Thank you everyone for joining us today. I'm so excited to be with you, Celia. Thank you for joining us. Where are you from? Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Calgary, Alberta, in Canada.
Awesome. And thank you so much for, you know, sharing your bio. Like, you have lived so many lives in such a short period of time. You've done a lot, and that really inspires me. So thank you for coming on and sharing your story today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited. Excited to be here.
I would really like to start, you know, you have so much that you're offering now, and you've, you know, all of us have such amazing and inspiring stories of how we came to be. And I'd just love for you to really share with us a little bit about where you're an advocate, you're an activist, you're a healer. There's so many different parts of you. And I'd just love to share for you to share a little bit about your story of how you came into those roles. What was the drive? What inspired you? And that brought you to what you do today.
it's a long story. I'll try to keep it short. I think the activism, actually, if I recall, like when you, as soon as you say that word, that just takes me back to elementary school. And I was always like getting kids to sign petitions and sending them off
really?
To whoever we sent them to in elementary school for pollution and garbage and smoking.
Wow.
I don't even remember what, but I'm sure all my friends were sick of me getting them to sign petitions. But I remember doing it on foolscap, you know, that extra long paper that you used to have.
Yeah. Wow.
So that was probably the start of the activism. When I was 15, I met somebody who was a CUSO volunteer. And CUSO is a Canadian volunteer sending organization that's been around since 1961. And when I was 15, I said, someday I'm going to do what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And I married a farmer and moved to Southern. I moved out of Winnipeg. I grew up in Winnipeg. I moved to a farm in Southern Manitoba. We were organic farmers. And after farming for quite a while, we actually moved to Indonesia as CUSO volunteers, which was amazing. So it was during my agriculture period that I actually started doing energy work. So I have to sort of like weave the story in a little bit, but as an organic farmer, I was exposed to lots of different thoughts of how we grow our food, how we live. You know, I was exposed to something called biodynamic agriculture, permaculture, organic farming. It was where I started learning how to use a pendulum, you know, out in the fields, looking for healthy plants, looking for water, stuff like that. So it was a very, expansive period of my life, but I will say that at that point, my realm of energy and understanding was all around how connected the world and the plants are, but I'm pretty sure I kept me and humans separate from all of that for a while. Well, I don't know why.
Yeah.
But everything was connected. You know, we did a lot of intercropping. It was a really interesting sort of ecological period of my life. And then we moved to Indonesia. We lived on the island of Timor. Mm-hmm. Our daughter was five and we lived there for 2 years and I taught permaculture there. And I was exposed to a lot, you know, that they used a lot of pendulums there looking for water. You know, it just sort of kept popping up everywhere I went.
Well, I'm just curious. So how did you first get introduced to pendulum work then when you were working with your organic farm?
Through a guy who was actually, he was called the grazer. There's a restaurant in San Francisco called Chez Panisse, which is a very famous organic restaurant that's been around since probably the 70s. Mm-hmm. And this guy used to go out and forage for the food for the restaurant for the day. And he would only pick things that the pendulum said were healthy. And then he'd bring them back to Alice Waters, who was the chef. And he was actually, it was a course I took. And he introduced us to that then. And there was also people that would come to our farm that were like Reiki healers, but for animals, and would do stuff with their hands or with pendulums over some of the animals.
That's fascinating.
It was a few different places where it dipped in.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen a pendulum before, but quickly became fascinated by them.
Yeah.
They are fascinating.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
I think, you know, for myself, like I always scan. So I scan food whenever I go to the grocery store to pick the health, you know, I always ask for the healthiest food to show itself. Yeah. And then I usually scan over and just whatever has more vitality, I just kind of feel it. And it just kind of pops in my hand energetically. And then I can take it. And I find it lasts longer. And I recommend my food anyway, but I just find it really fascinating because I haven't really been drawn to pendulum work. I mean, I can do pendulum work. I check myself as a pendulum, but I've never really met anyone else that, you know, all of this has been popping up for quite a while for you. So that's really fascinating.
It has. And I like the pendulum because it's such a visual.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can also do that with my hand, but I actually love, you know, you pull the pendulum out and you put it over something. And sometimes, like right now, it's just, well, okay, it's going to go. Sometimes when I'm working on something, it will go in such a wide circle.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just fascinates me, and it fascinates, you know, if I'm working on somebody, just the amount of energy that comes out. So, I don't know, I'm a bit of a visual person, so that's probably why I'm still hooked on the pendulum.
That's okay.
I'm just
fascinated to why people are drawn to certain things.
Yes.
So then it obviously showed up in Indonesia as well. So definitely on the right track there. So very cool.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So Indonesia. So we were there for 2 years as volunteers with CUSO and teaching stuff. And I was on an island called Timor in West Timor. Very remote location, and it was fascinating. And then That sort of was the catalyst for my career switch. So we moved back to our farm in Manitoba, and then I was looking for some off-farm income. And honestly, I talked my way into the next job, which was coordinating a peace and human rights program based on the island of Timor in Indonesia. I could speak the language. I'd just moved back from there. I had actually spent that whole year pretty much lying in bed because we came home because I had dengue fever, which is nickname is breakbone fever, which is funny because right now I have a broken bone. But I digress. Anyways, at the end of this year of recovering from dengue fever, which is this crazy virus that you get from a mosquito, I got this other job, and they actually paid for my master's degree in human security and peace building. So I made this leap from organic agriculture, permaculture into the world of peace and human rights. And I did it by talking them into hiring me by saying that food was a basic human right.
Yeah, well, it is.
So that was fascinating. Right. Living and working. Well, I didn't live in Indonesia, but I traveled. I spent a good, 5-6 months of every year there for a good 10 years going through all the conflict zones. So we started out in Timor. It was right after the East Timor referendum. And I don't know if you remember that, but it was a part of history where there was a large genocide in East Timor that was brought on by the Indonesian military. And so we worked on the island of Timor, and then from there we moved to Aceh, and then from there to Papua. So all the major conflict, internal conflicts in Indonesia, we had peace programs in.
And what was that like for you?
You know, that was fascinating.
Like, were you there during the military, like during those experiences like that were actually going on, or were you there after?
In Indonesia, we were there during. So what happens is they have these areas of military control, and sometimes they will let foreigners in and sometimes they won't. So for instance, in Aceh, we were in Aceh up until about 6 months before the tsunami in 2004. We were there. We were one of the last NGOs that they escorted out. And our work was to accompany human rights lawyers whose lives were in danger because of the work they do. So we had volunteers on the ground who would accompany the human rights lawyers, and I would go in and meet with all the sort of the government level people and the higher up military, and we would just let them know exactly who we were, what we were doing, because that was our safety link, because it doesn't work in all conflicts. It only works in certain areas where they actually don't want to kill a foreigner. And so, they used to say to their human rights lawyers who would go, if they were on the road without one of us, where's your foreigner today? But they would never kill them. But they went under an even stricter military control just before the tsunami. And that's actually why the tsunami was so bad in Aceh. That was the epicenter of it. But the Indonesian government didn't let any foreigners in for about 4 or 5 days after the tsunami hit. So there was a lot of death right afterwards. And I was in Aceh about 3 weeks after the tsunami. And entire villages were wiped out, and people were just like, it was just incredible to see the destruction that the tsunami hit. But and also
for you to witness that, what was the experience for you just walking in and to see this?
It really, really hard. Yeah. When I take myself back to that, like, I can still smell the smell of death.
Wow.
The sadness of people who had just, like, entire villages had been wiped out. We lost, a couple of the best human rights lawyers were lost in the tsunami. So they had the conflict and all the death that had caused. And then they had the tsunami on top of that. And so we continued to work there for a few years after that. And that's where I really, the island of Timor, where I really noticed how people can change, like, no matter what their circumstances are. And that really gave me hope for humanity. Because I've witnessed some of the worst things that have happened to people. Mm-hmm. And people still come out ahead, smiling and living their lives and growing and becoming better people.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gave me the idea that no matter what, I think I always felt pretty privileged. I'm not, you know, I'm just an average Canadian from a middle-class mm-hmm. family in Manitoba. nothing special here. But I always felt fairly privileged compared to the stories that I had heard. And I think I always felt a need to go and share some part of me, to go and change the world, to make it a better place, you know, like, cause my little heart was just like always pulled
mm-hmm.
by all of these stories.
Well, and that's big work, but to me, it sounds like you answered a big calling. So it's, besides being privileged, your heart was guiding you into these directions to help, to serve, and you answered the call. Like, would you have done anything otherwise?
You know, when you put it that way, I don't think so. I think when my heart calls, I don't always hear it the first time.
But you go.
But I go.
Yeah. Well, and I think it takes a lot of courage to listen to that call, to hear the call, and then to act on the call. Like, that's, you know, so many of us, me included, sometimes I'm like, oh, I should go do that. Yeah, well, somebody else can go do that, right? Because it's so easy to say that. And I think that's sometimes where, you know, we are privileged and it's easy to say no, but I think it takes a lot of courage to really step forward and say yes.
Yeah, I think there is some part of me that does have a lot of courage, because when I look back on some of the things I have done, I'm like, I don't know if I could do that now. But mm-hmm. I don't know if I couldn't do it now, really. I think it's just part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Always felt this need, or this, if something needs to happen,
mm-hmm.
I do like to step in and mm-hmm. facilitate that.
Yeah, and we need people like you. The world needs people like you. And so what, just by you being in these places and witnessing what you witnessed, how do you feel that that changed you or added to you, or even just the learnings, and like, what did you take away from these experiences?
Well, you know, I think it just makes me really, really, really want to work hard at changing myself, because I think I've said this before. It's like, before I used to think I needed to change the world, but then I realized I needed to change myself. And I think that my work now leads more to individual change. What I realized there, you know, and we went from Aceh to Papua. Mm-hmm. And the reason we opened up there is because somebody sent me a photo of 5 Indonesian military men, kind of dressed like, it was a photo that reminded me of rural Canada men holding up their deer that they had shot in deer mm-hmm. hunting season. Right. And I'm sorry, this is a grim photo, but it was a Papuan man that they were holding up that they had killed. Mm-hmm. And that was why we went there and opened this up. And it's just like the lower level of consciousness that people have, where they actually think that it's good or right to kill other people,
mm-hmm.
really just burns in my heart. And so, and we can't, like, I can't go over there and change those people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
I can be an activist about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But until we each work to bring more peace into our own hearts and raise our own vibration,
mm-hmm.
and that's, I don't know how long that's going to take. There's a lot of us doing it, but
yeah.
That's the kind of work we need to do, you know. And I went to Rwanda after that, and the same thing, like the mass genocide that happened there, but the people that survived it, they're amazing, you know. And the president Kagame, who was the president after after the genocide, he just asked the survivors to forgive.
Right.
And he said, you're the only people that I can ask. You're the only people that have anything to forgive, because mm-hmm. those that did that, you know, they have to forgive themselves. But mm-hmm. So even just it's all about,
yeah, just in that statement, I got goosebumps through my body. Because how difficult to face that, but also to stand in the energy of forgiveness, because it's freeing yourself.
It is.
Right? And we can keep spreading hate and pain, or yep. we can continue to spread love and peace. And that's where the healing is.
Exactly. It is where the healing is. And I used to not understand forgiveness. I remember when I was a kid, teenager or something, some family had forgiven the man who had killed their son. Mm. And I'm like, I would never be able to do that, you know, back then. Right. And now I totally understand that's what set them free. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the hardest lessons that we have to learn.
Yeah.
And we have to learn, like, to forgive ourselves.
Yep.
First, and then mm-hmm. to forgive others. And often, like, and back then, I would never have thought I had anything to forgive myself for.
Right.
But, oh, yeah. That's not true either.
That's not true either. Yeah, so true.
So I think all of these experiences, they exposed me to people who are so incredibly strong, so strong of spirit, and so, so full of love.
Mm-hmm.
That they could survive and move past. And I'm like, if they can change, anybody in this world can change,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I don't know anybody in Canada who's experienced what people have experienced in those conflict zones, unless they've mm-hmm. moved here from those conflict zones.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it just gave me hope that we just need better lessons. We need more skills and better lessons.
Mm, so what kind of skills?
Well, forgiveness, gratitude. Those mm-hmm. are two of the highest vibe things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after my work overseas ended, you know, I went to Pakistan too, but there's too many of those stories. So
we'll have to do another segment. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. That's another story. Yeah, the Taliban. That's another story. Mm-hmm. We'll save that for another day.
Mm-hmm.
But I came back from there, and I was working in Winnipeg, and you know, this one morning I woke up and I was thinking, I really want to live anymore. Like I was filled with anxiety and fear all of a sudden. Like just, it was around a really tragic death of a former colleague that was in Pakistan. And, and I got this fear and anxiety, and I just thought, oh, I don't know if I want to live. And I a real deep sadness to depression mm-hmm. fell over me. And I almost didn't get out of bed for 3 full months. And for me, yeah. that was really unusual, because I'm like a go-getter kind of person. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, there's something wrong. What's wrong with mm-hmm. me? And, you know, my doctor wanted to prescribe meds, and I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do that. I called a friend, and she wanted to like get me to talk therapy. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do that either. Mm-hmm. So that's when I went down the energy rabbit hole.
Nice. Well, my view on depression is deeper rest. And going through everything that you've gone through and being so close to all of that, I mean, it's heavy work, you know. Okay. It's just because really, just from what we've talked about to this point, is to me, it feels like you've been a sacred space holder. That has been one of your keys, or one of your important roles as you've moved through the world. You've been a space holder and a communicator, and it takes a lot of energy to hold space, especially for these countries that you have been visiting and the passion that really brought you to those areas. So from my perspective, I'm just seeing you as just holding the container of love and being the messenger of love and just the messenger of leading people into safety, and then bringing people, you know, resources or whatever that is. Like that, I don't know, that's what I'm getting from all of this.
Yeah, I love that. Because I actually have the words "be love" written on the back of my car.
There you go. Yeah. So just to be love. And if that's your role, it's exhausting. I've gone through it myself. Just hold it, you know, I mean, I've worked with thousands of people and, you know, there's times where I found I can't even get out of bed, you know, for a period of time or whatever, but I try really hard not to put a label on it. Because I do believe, as you know, we're processing at such high levels of energy, consciously and unconsciously, that the human body needs to rest, right? Yes. And despite what you've lived through, you know, at the end of the day, we are so vulnerable, and yet you've lived through so much. So, you know, from my view, I'm like, of course that would hit you. And of course you've done so much zooming around, you know, running around and you know, just holding the space. Like, yeah, your body was tired.
It was. Yeah. That's I love that description. That's very beautiful. I will own that. You're Thank welcome. You.
Yeah. So, and especially having a friend. So during that time, what came forward for you? Any messages or any insights about your life experiences, or what do you feel that 3 months was about for you?
You know, actually it was, I was tired. I slept. I barely could move. I just was, my body could barely get out of the bed to go to the kitchen to grab food. So yeah, I think what you say is right. And then it was also the catalyst where I went from, okay, I no longer need to change the world. I need to change myself.
Yeah. That's a huge statement. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we can't have world peace until I have peace in myself. Like, it's all the inner work that we have to do. Mm-hmm. And I never used to know what inner work was.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's the journey for most people, you know, is, like, I think the biggest thing I've learned is self-responsibility, you know, and I was so resistant years ago to self-responsibility. I'm not taking ownership. And at the end of the day, we have to take full ownership for ourselves.
We do. And that's something that's not taught. And I think that's so much of what I think, like, all of the things that I teach now are skills that I wish I had learned as a young girl. Because I think my teenage years would have been a little bit easier. I, you know, would have had more skills to deal with a lot of the things that I did end up dealing with in a rather bumbly manner. And they're basic life skills that I think should be included in the curriculum at every school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like getting in touch with our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the first things I teach now is, like, how do we connect to our bodies? And then, you know, how do we connect to our hearts?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what I studied, like, when I, after my little mini crash, I actually took some time off and I went and I studied and I became a yoga teacher. I didn't ever really teach much, but mm-hmm. I did that for myself.
Right.
I thought I might be a yoga teacher. And then I did my Reiki certification. And then I did my Tantra certification, and that was actually a really big game changer for me, because that's really where I much more connected with my body.
Mm-hmm.
In ways that I didn't even, you know were possible. Like, and I'm gonna share with you some of those things, because they're a little fun. But Tantra, what else did I do? I did some heart math. Meditation, a lot of meditation, and the meditation that I do is really an energy-based meditation. And right now I am taking the best course ever. And it's called an intuitive meditation training.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by, the author of one of my favorite books. Can I pop that up now?
Yeah, sure.
The Radiance Sutras by Lauren Roche.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I love the title of this is 112 Gateways into the Yoga of Wonder and Delight. And I think that that's what going on my inner journey taught me.
Mm-hmm. So
we live in a world of wonder and delight. In spite mm-hmm. of all the stuff that's happening, if everybody could just get back into their body and into their heart mm-hmm. and have all that alignment of their chakras, mm-hmm. We would live in wonder and delight. We would live.
I totally agree. Absolutely agree. Well, that's one of my favorite words, actually, is wonder and delight. I have a quick little story about my discovery of delight.
Yes, please.
I was actually on a retreat in Mexico a few years ago, and we were doing yoga in front of the ocean, like just sand yoga. And it was so profound. And as the waves were coming, it was just this moment. It was just so melodic. And I can't remember the pose we were doing. I'm not very good at yoga, but it was like we're all wrapped up and standing on one leg and whatever. But it was just this beautiful moment where I really embodied the energy of delight. And it was like the wave stood. It was like time stood still. And the wave came up and it was just kind of standing like this. It was like it was moving, but it wasn't breaking. And so it was like time stood still enough for me to witness it, just the wave standing. And then there were these pelicans that were going through as well. But it felt like everything was going through me and I was witnessing all of it. Like it was just so expansive. And I just had this wave, like literally as the wave broke, it was like this wave of delight that literally just moved through my cells and through my body and everything. And I was just like, it was just that epiphany of I literally felt delight, which breaking down is the light, right? So it was just so profound. And that was like, I mean, I've had many, many light filled experiences, but that was definitely a palpable one where I felt all time and space didn't exist. It was just everything came into oneness. Like it was just, it was amazing. But I wish more people would experience that, right? Like it's that the embodiment piece. And that's kind of where I'm moving my work into a little bit more now is the embodiment of, you know, of life, aliveness. You know, we need to teach people, you know, that's the biggest teaching is getting people confident and comfortable in feeling being in their body, taking up the space.
Well, and giving them permission. I feel like I didn't have permission, to like enjoy my body as a good little Catholic girl.
No, you know? Sure.
No pleasure here. So like a lot of the teachings that I was raised with were around shame.
Yes.
You know, and that's the lowest vibration we can be in, and shame around your body. And so like feeling any delight or pleasure in your body is like somehow like even as an adult feels like, oh, I'm doing something wrong. So you actually have to give yourself permission to like go for it.
Yeah. I feel the biggest challenge for myself has been, it feels too much love, right? It's like, no, that's too much love, too much pleasure, too much bliss. Can't have too much. And I do. And I still find as much as I've let more in and I, you know, I'm still unlearning. Right. And I've really had, I had just had that huge epiphany even last week is we experience moments of pleasure and bliss. And yet we could live, like, what if we could live in pleasure and bliss more than pain? But we live in a world where pain dominates, right? And it doesn't have to be physical pain, but it is hurtful. It's like this constant underlying low-grade fever almost that is just constant throbbing, constant pain, constant whatever. And we live there, I would say 90% of the time. And then that 10%, you know, is it's like we allow little bits of it in, but it's fleeting.
Yes. I love that. That's so true because, you know, you think about the conversations I used to have, not so much anymore, mm-hmm. but the conversations that I can recall having, especially, you know, when my marriage was breaking down, everybody was mm-hmm. complaining about everything. You know, we were adding negative energy to negative energy instead of celebrating the moments of joy and delight and making those grow. Mm-hmm. And that's a skill. That's another skill we need to learn.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because there is a lot of joy and awe and delight in this world and in ourselves. We just need to choose it and to celebrate it and to spend less time on the other so that it goes away.
Well, and it goes back to permission. I think that is, and I constantly am doing that within myself. I'm giving myself permission to feel this. I'm giving myself permission to open the door, to open to more, to, and I literally have to say that. It's like, I give myself permission to allow.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. So many people just don't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't
get. And we need to change that conversation. So yes.
We give everybody who's listening to this permission for pleasure, permission for delight, permission to feel damn good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, like, especially around tantric, well, even meditation, you know, I'd love to hear any of your experience. Have you ever had a Kundalini awakening? Yeah. Yes. So I've had experiences with it too. And it's been, again, it comes and it's fleeting. I've had, you know, but I'd love for you to share a little bit more about just your, I'm learning more about Tantra and understanding what Tantra actually means. I've had lots of other great conversations with Tantric teachers. I have another podcast on that as well. And, you know, I'd love for you to share just a little bit about, you know, how meditation, Tantra, you know, releasing some of the uncertainty around it, because it seems scary, daunting, too much. I don't know. What would you like to share about that?
Sure. So Tantra is often just considered a sex practice, thanks to Sting and his 9-hour sex escapade that was reported in some newspaper several years ago. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Tantra stuff that was brought from the East to the West, they just took that portion out. And that's a small portion of it. What Tantra really is it's like the weaving together and accessing the divine in you. Mm-hmm. So it's all about accessing your divine energy, your divine life force energy, and living through it. So it's how you live every moment of your life, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, it's not just about having great sex. It's about having a great life by being connected, by weaving all the parts together of you. Mm-hmm. You know, I teach, my meditation consists of my two secret squeezes, which I'm going to teach you guys in a second here. But I teach these to men and women, and one of my male clients recently said, he said, I love the secret squeeze. It's like, it's bringing all the absent sort of pieces of me back home.
Beautiful.
This is, it feels like it's coming back home. Mm-hmm. And I used to describe it as like champagne bubbles going through my body when I was meditating. Oh, so that's why meditation is a party.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's actually about learning that you have a life force energy. Mm-hmm. And learning how to move it. And that's one of the first things I teach, because people need to get reconnected back to their bodies, because generally as children, you know, we've been having a pretty good time in our little bodies until, you know, mom or dad comes along and says, oh, don't do that, that's embarrassing, right? You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, don't touch that in public, and you know. It's because nobody's really taught like how to go from the stage of being this little cute child who's delighted in their body and everything they're learning from it, right?
Yeah.
To being somebody who has to like be proper and dressed and in school and sitting still. Like that transition for all of us is insane.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
It's like we need some new lessons here. So what I learned in my Tantra course that I've taken into my meditations is there's two squeezes. The first one I'm going to teach is in the throat. Mm-hmm. So your life force energy basically goes from your perineum up to the top of your head. And there's two really great places where you can activate it. Mm-hmm. And one of them is in the throat. And this one's something that maybe if you've taken a yoga class, you've heard of. It's called Ujjayi breath or ocean breath. I like to think of it as like it does, you know how if you put a seashell over your ear and it sounds mm-hmm. like the ocean, that's kind of what it sounds like. It also is like my version of kitten purring. So you're constricting the back of your throat. Mm-hmm. So you're feeling a little vibration and warmth. Like it literally, honestly, when I was in Pakistan and I was freezing and I was scared all the time, this breath kept me calm and centered and warm. Mm-hmm. So you're basically just constricting the back of your throat. And if people are having a hard time figuring out what that means, it's like when you go like this to fog mm-hmm. your glasses, if you have glasses, you know how the warm air comes out? You know how you're kind of constricting your throat to get that out? That's the feeling that you want in your throat.
Okay.
So it's kind of at the back of your throat. You're mm-hmm. constricting it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you feel that?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done this breath?
Mm-mm.
No. Okay. So just breathing in and out, but not through, like closing your mouth. I'm only doing that to show you what it feels like, but so you can kind of hear a little noise. Sometimes if you're in yoga classes, you'll hear people who are doing it really, really loudly. And it's like, you're in a room of people that have gone to the Darth Vader movies and they think they need to be that loud, but it should only be loud enough for you to hear.
Mm-hmm. I got it.
Okay. You got that? Okay. So that's my secret squeeze that I call the calming. That's the calming breath. I honestly breathe like that probably 90% of my life now. Just because it does what it's good for, in addition to what I'm going to teach, but it connects to your vagus nerve, because there's lots of nerve endings mm-hmm. of your vagus yeah. nerve here in the throat, and that vagus nerve is the one that goes all the way from our brain mm-hmm. down to our perineum and back up, and tons of nerve endings in the gut, so you know that gut feeling. Mm-hmm. This is a way to really calm your whole nervous system and to connect your energy system. So once you've got that and you can breathe like that, then I like to add in
mm-hmm.
the fun secret squeeze. So this is also a yoga term that most yoga teachers don't teach this. And it's a root lock, and it's called Mula Bandha. Mm-hmm. And so it's at your perineum.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically squeezing your perineum. So, and if you know like a Kegel exercise, which is a very kind of a harsher male version that's not yogic based. So we don't want to do the Kegel, but that's where it is. Mm-hmm. You're basically doing this and think sensual, mm-hmm. think light, and sort of like you're squeezing at your perineum. And I like to think of it as like a little elevator coming up. So it's like I squeeze and I can almost feel it rise sort of 1, 2, 3 and when you do that, like, and I just do that on the inhale. So I don't do that. I release it on the exhale. So squeezing in and just start to, even if you can't feel your energy, I want you to think about it, because you need to like visualize that you've got energy. You've got a life force energy, because that's where all your life force energy is. That's where you make the babies. And, you know, you're bringing that energy up your whole central energy channel. And then, you know, you connect it with your throat and up out the top of your head. And it's just like this beautiful continual loop. So you squeeze on the inhale, and I usually count in 3 to 5 breaths on the way up. And then I release the secret squeezes and let it go down. And then I squeeze again, gentle sensual squeeze, breathing up, 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 up.
So are we doing the throat breath as well?
Yes.
Okay.
So when I squeeze the perineum, I'm also squeezing the throat. It might be too much to figure out to do both at once. So if you can only do one, that's fine. Just practice one till you've got it, and then practice the other one till you've got it, and then you can put them together. But the one at the bottom, when you really get that secret squeeze going up and then releasing. Mm. So you're only squeezing on the inhale. So I basically do both squeezes on my inhale, and then I release both squeezes on my exhale. And you will just start to think.
Okay, I actually started feeling a bit lightheaded.
I taught this at a women talk thing, and once, I don't know if you were there, but one of the women in
you
the
must
audience
have missed
was,
it. Yeah.
Says, "Oh my goodness, standing in the grocery line is going to be so much more fun now."
Right.
But basically, that's what I teach people to get reconnected to their body, because it's their life force energy, it's their connection to their vagus nerve, and it's their and that's like your whole central energy channel, right? And that's we have to clean that up. I like to do this. I like to say, do this for 5 minutes every day. Think of it like washing your face and brushing your teeth, and now you're cleaning your energy channel.
Great.
So, like, if everybody learned how to do that. That's just a little bit of, and I call it the secret squeeze, right? Because nobody knows you're doing it, and you can put a little grin on your face because all of a sudden you got like this little pleasure going through your body.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways that we can reconnect and give ourselves permission daily to the joy of being in our human body.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I do my meditations, that's actually like if I want to just do a 5 minute meditation before I go to sleep or before I get out of bed in the morning, that's mm-hmm. what I do.
Mm-hmm. I so love that. I'm going to incorporate more of that. It took me a little bit, like, cause I was just like, okay, what's happening?
Yeah.
And then I was like, can I add the breath in? And then, yeah, I'm like, oh, I can do both. And it just was effortless. But also, like, I'm a Reiki master and teacher as well. So when we're doing attunements and passing the attunement, right, it's building up the chi. And yeah. I would admit that I probably do it. I can do this gentler. Usually it's more aggressive for me where I'm really focusing on my breath and I'm really feeling like I'm feeling it. Like I'm in it and I'm
yes.
can be a louder breather
yep.
while I'm doing that. But you just showed me how I can make it more gentle and it's powerful. So it's, you know, and I do believe in more gentle approaches. So thank you for sharing that. That was amazing.
Oh yeah, you're welcome. And I do love the gentle approach of it. Cause I've studied with some male teachers who teach some stuff similar to this.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh God, it's so hard.
Well, that was my teacher too. Yeah. It's hard and it has to be this way, right?
Yeah.
No, it can be a different way.
Soft and sensual.
I love that. Thank you. Well, and I think that goes to meditation too. You know, I think meditate, like for me, you know, I always think meditation doesn't have to be hard work either. I mean, nothing needs to be. I've moved into the belief system that nothing needs to be hard work anymore. But that's still a deep belief system that we carry that shows up in lots of different ways, and including doing Reiki attunements even, right? So thank you. I just learned that. but it's just looking at all the different ways in our life of like, how are we making things so difficult and hard? And I think, you know, people don't meditate because they think they have to sit in solitary isolation, you know, which are all negative connotations. It's not that way. I think, I know from, and maybe you have, I'd love to hear your opinion too, but for me, it's like a walking meditation. Like I run mantras in my head while I'm doing my walking. And I just find, you know, as I'm going out or even doing labyrinth work, I love working with the labyrinth and just contemplation and asking questions. And then on my return, I always get the answers, right? And I think meditation is kind of the same way. It can be light, it can be playful, it can be in lots of different ways and forms. Washing, you know, for me it's washing dishes, cooking. I find lots of different ways that I get into a meditative state. So I'd love to for you to share a little bit about, you know, meditation and your version of teaching.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel about meditation. That's why I'm loving this meditation training I'm taking now, because it's actually the first one that connects in with how I believe meditation should be.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about it as intuitive meditation. So we take people through. So, you know, tell me about a time when you were just like so happy. Where were you? What did you feel like? What were you doing? Where did you feel it in your body? You know, and bring them back to that state. And meditation does not have to mean that we're sitting cross-legged with our back straight. Mm-hmm. There are meditative moments like you talk about, and there are meditative states that we can get into. Walking in nature is a beautiful one. I love to walk by the beach if I'm by the ocean. Any of these things where you really want to, you don't want to sit and force yourself. Like, we live in the modern world. We are not monks up on the mountain in the Himalayas. And so what my current teacher talks about is taking all those lessons and making them modern for people. And that there are these stages that we go through. And one of them is like replaying the stuff that happened in our day and then letting it go and, you know, resting and relaxing and rehearsing something we're going to do and then resting. Like, you go through these phases and that's okay. And, you know, I've always said that runner's high is a meditative state. I've never experienced it because I'm not a runner, but you know, like things like that, where it takes you to a place of total alignment and pleasure in your body, is really like, meditation is meant to be a party. It's meant to be joyful. It's meant to be sensual. It's meant to, you know, I love how he and his wife, the couple that teach it, are adorable. They're 70 years old and they are full of life and vigor. And they just talk meditation. You know, if it feels sinful, you're probably doing it right. Like, it's not meant to be hard. So yeah, I just love it. And can you humor me and let me read you a sutra from this book?
For sure.
So this is a translation that my teacher did of an ancient tantra text. And basically it's 112 gateways into meditation. And I guarantee that everybody has at least stepped through one of these gateways.
Beautiful.
And so you can also just take one of these and read them and use that as your meditation for the day.
Beautiful.
And I love this one. It is Tantra 101. The reality of the divine is everywhere apparent, especially among people who haven't even thought about it. The very nature of I consciousness, to be an individual, is in essence divine. The excitement of the Eternal One is throbbing in the heart of every creature. Know this and be without superiority, inferiority, or resentment at your limitations.
Ooh, that's a beautiful one.
Isn't it beautiful? It's like we are all the same.
Yeah.
And I just love that. You know, we can all access this beautiful divine life force inside of us that connects us to the larger, wider world of love and wisdom, that universal love and wisdom that everybody can access. That energy that's out there is within everybody. And we need permission and knowledge that it's ours to access and that it's not sinful to do so.
Right. So powerful. Yes. It's not sinful to feel good. That's our gateway.
Yeah, exactly. I think of the times when I was sad and angry, and I look at people who are like that now and I'm just like, oh, doesn't have to be this way. We need new pathways. We need pathways to joy.
Absolutely. I mean, and and I think too, you know, we need to understand the story of the becoming, right? So we can unbecome. Yes. And it's scary to, because that's the unknown. And I'm still going through it even to this day of unbecoming. Yes. I fully admit it's scary to be in those places because we live in a society where we need to know what's next, right? Yes. We need to have the answer. We need to show that we're figuring it out, right? Yes. It was always you always had to be proving that you're showing value of some sort. And that's even for myself right now, just deepening into value work. I've spent years, developing and looking at different our value systems.
Yes.
And even now I've been really sitting with, I'm in a training program right now as well. And we're looking at, you know, the should values versus permission values. And I've really been sitting with that. And it's been really, really interesting work. And this could be a whole other podcast. But, you know, again, it's giving permission. It's letting go of the belief systems that we've cultivated in the should society. And we need to unbecome so that we can become something more, something else, but by giving full permission to be it, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We need to learn that it's okay to move from fear into love.
Yeah.
And that's where we should be living. And the more we step into the light that love is and out of the darkness that fear is, the more joy and abundance and happiness and life fulfilling experiences we have.
Yeah. There's even so in my work, I'm like, how can I go lighter? Right. And that's, it doesn't, you know, people are like, I need that hard massage. I need the hard work. I need the, you know, I need to be in competition mode. I need to, you know, and I used to be that person. Like I was all for all of that. And now I'm so different. I run my business so different. I run my life so different. And one of my values that I'm playing with is spaciousness, right? Yes. So what does spaciousness mean and how does that show up? And it's a scary place because it's not necessarily anchored to something, even though, you know, I see all these empty vessels, you know, people running around because they're not in their bodies. And there's this perception of being anchored to, you know, that outside work, right? The outside yes. what other people say we should be doing to show that we're valuable versus right. really working within. And I think, you know, we see that in other cultures, you know, like war. And I think it's the scare, it's being scared, uncertain. Yep. And that's what flips the switch for people is yes. that deep seated fear.
Yep.
And what if more people just stood up for, you know, and said, no, that's not right.
Yes.
I don't agree with this.
That's exactly what we need to do. It's all mm-hmm. right now outside in, and we need to be inside out.
Inside out. I agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes courage. It takes courage for people to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And courage and the knowledge that it can be done.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the part. Is the knowledge, because it's so, so scary to be in the unknown. And even now, like I'm having different conversations with people and it's fascinating because I've really, you know, I'm still working at, you know, even just this concept of living in spaciousness as a level of success versus living in contraction and having to achieve these things. Whose value is that? Right.
Right.
And society yeah. lives in that way. It's like, I want to see the proof. What is the proof of your success? And in the spaciousness, it's so unknown. There's no formula. There's no tangible outcome other than it feels good.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, spaciousness, getting away from that hustle, hustle, hustle.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of goes back to one of our earlier conversations, like being in pain and hurt. And it's like, we're busy, we complain, we do this. Mm-hmm. But when you actually step back and you choose a different conversation, you choose different words, and mm-hmm. you choose to slow down and actually like, connect to who you are, life does shift exponentially.
Mm-hmm. Massively.
But it's mm-hmm. but I know before I made that shift that I didn't know that. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't even know it existed. Like I actually remember thinking, what do you mean? Like when I first was when I was younger thinking, oh, I don't understand what that energy thing is. And oh, I don't understand. Like, and some people who were like happy, like me, like I'm sure there's somebody listening here going, oh, she pisses me off. She's a little too happy. Happy people sometimes used to piss me off.
Yeah.
And it's because I wasn't happy and I really wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, where is my inner joy? And why is that person got that happiness and I don't, you know? It's like, it hurts when we can't be or get to what we want, and then we show up this other side of us who isn't really us. Mm-hmm. That's when we show off our fear and our anger and our and a side of us that isn't the true self. It's mm-hmm. the illusion.
Well, and I think too, everybody's at a different stage of awareness. Yes. and I think back too, you know, there would, you know, because I couldn't hear my external voice being negative. Like when I was sharing, you know, it was just what I knew.
Yes.
And then somebody would tell me it was wrong. And I don't agree with that either. Like, I think we still need to express. It's about, there's an avenue of expression, but also, and I teach my clients this, you know, every time we tell the story of what happened to you, what happened to me, right? That story of I'm the victim of this experience. Every time we tell that over and over, we anchoring it in. There's no other alternative or view. But we have to recognize that everyone's seeing their life and their reality through a certain lens. And I can't tell that person that that lens is wrong.
No.
But it's also, their story isn't wrong, right? Nope. We can't devalue the story, but it's also, you know, I believe that there's different ways of accessing the story, and it's in the body, because I believe a body is a filing system. Our cells hold the memory of these experiences that happen. And so if all the cells are over full up with this repeat story that has probably happened in many different versions of lifetime, it's never just the same, that one-time story. It's always linked to other stories. Yes. But we have to unwind it, and we have to meet that person where they are, but also give them the tools, right? Yes. It's not just saying you're wrong and you can't feel that way. I believe we have to feel. You fully have to feel the expression of whatever it is that you're feeling. But that's the challenge, is we're telling the story, we're not feeling it.
Right? That's right.
And so it's learning how to feel from square one. It's like identifying the emotion, identify the experience. And then it breaks it. It's like a charm, right? It's just that, to me, that's the magic, where it just pattern interrupts. It breaks the cycle of the nervous system. And then you can take in a new level of information.
Yes.
And that's where, you know, we have to be careful, where it's like, no, you can't say that. No, you have to say it this way. You have to change your pattern. Yes, I recognize it. And I had people say that to me before. It's like, they would interrupt me, but they would say, you know, you need to say this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because they weren't meeting me where I was.
Exactly.
Right? Because you have to meet like with like in order to break, right?
And yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. And until we're exposed to somebody who's got a little different way of thought and a little different way of doing mm-hmm. it, and mm-hmm. we're open to that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the key part too, is we have to be open to
yes.
that change. And it is scary being in the unknown, because we've only known one version of our story. We didn't exactly. know, right? It's like, there's too much love. You know, I think about, you know, even just the evolution of being a hugger. You know, I didn't grow up in a hugging family. We didn't hug. We didn't touch. You know, there was no touch. And now, like, my family is they're a hugging family. Like, we hug each other when we see each other more so. And it's interesting when you hug people who are non-huggers, it's like the push off, right? It's like the, you know, it's like a smack and a push.
That's hilarious, but that's very true.
Versus, it's like, even sometimes I forget and I'm like, hi, here's my Dixie Bear hug. And people are like, whoa, like too much. Right. So it's just, it's really interesting, even for my, you know, just to witness within myself, where am I pushing love away? And is it too much?
Right.
Pleasure, bliss, too much. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's such a beautiful space to be in.
Yeah. And even that is beautiful because it's just recognizing where are my limitations, but you can't change, you can't open the door until you're ready.
No, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. I mean, I think if we were taught things like this as children,
mm-hmm.
you know, we could avoid a lot of that stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to be a few generations before we actually get that whole system.
Well, but you know, and it's our teachers, it's our, you know, it's society as a whole. And I love your statement that you shared is, you know, you used to go chasing people, or not chasing people, but trying to change the world. And now you're trying to change one person at a time. And exactly. I do believe that is that, you know, the answer is within each one of us.
Yeah.
And we have the ripple effect that we can create the chasm effect.
Yes.
Through the world, through one person teaches another person.
Yes, that's exactly what I believe. Because once we each raise our own energetic vibration,
mm-hmm.
that does that. You can feel that energy. You feel the energy of other people as soon as you walk into a room or you walk into their energetic space. You know mm-hmm. if it's good energy that you want to be in mm-hmm. or not.
Absolutely.
So the more we can each change and raise our vibration, whoa, this world could be
mm-hmm. amazing. But I love the squeezes. I will definitely be using more of those. And I hope
yes.
listeners will be using that too.
Good. I hope so. I'd
love to hear your comments. Please share your comments below. And we're just coming to the end of our time together. I've loved every minute of it. So thank you.
Thank
Do you have
you.
Any words of wisdom, any last minute thoughts that you'd like to share?
Practice the secret squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, honestly, it changed my life mm-hmm. because it reconnected me to me. It took a while, I won't lie, but it was really like, yeah, it was a life changer for me because I did not realize how disconnected I was. I would never have said that I was disconnected. I thought I was pretty mm-hmm. on track in my life.
Totally.
Would never have known until I did that. And I'm like, oh, I have a body.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even really explain the change, but it was a life changer for me. So,
well, to me, it's an alignment, right? It's as we're more aligned with ourselves,
yes,
then we can be more aligned in our life.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing. Like when our energy is out of whack, we are out of whack.
Yeah. And chaos ensues.
I would never have known that either.
Right.
Pardon me?
And chaos ensues, right? Around
exactly.
Us.
Exactly.
So when we're in chaos, we attract more chaos. When we're in alignment, we attract more aligned.
That,
easy steps.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
100% we do. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you again for your time. This has been
awesome. Thank you.
Just love you. Yeah. Love you. Love your
barely,
energy.
I can barely. Yeah.
Okay.
I can't lift this arm and the cast is too heavy.
We can do a spiritual high five.
Exactly. Thank you, Dixie. This has been fabulous. I love spending time with you.
Oh, thank you. You too. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. Please leave your comments below. And actually, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
So I have a website, CeliaLouise.com.
Perfect. Yeah. So if you'd like to follow Celia, you can connect with her there and I'll be sharing it in the comments below. So thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
Thank you.